Thank you, Mr. President. We've nearly finished this little exhibition, which was staged, I assume, for the benefit of a briefly amused press corps and in deference to political activists opposed to the war who have come to expect from Congress such gestures, empty though they may be, as proof that the majority in the Senate has heard their demands for action to end the war in Iraq. The outcome of this debate, the vote we are about to take, has never been in doubt to a single member of this body. And to state the obvious, nothing we have done for the last 24 hours will have changed any facts on the ground in Iraq or made the outcome of the war any more or less important to the security of our country. The stakes in this war remain as high today as they were yesterday. The consequences of an American defeat are just as grave, the costs of success just as dear. No battle will have been won or lost, no enemy will have been captured or killed, no ground will have been taken or surrendered, no soldier will have survived or been wounded, died or come home, because we spent an entire night delivering our poll-tested message points, spinning our sound bites, arguing with each other, and substituting our amateur theatrics for statesmanship. All we have achieved are remarkably similar newspaper accounts of our inflated sense of the drama of this display and our own temporary physical fatigue. Tomorrow the press will move on to other things, and we will be better rested. But nothing else has changed. In Iraq, American soldiers, Marines, sailors, and airmen are still fighting bravely and tenaciously in battles that are as dangerous, difficult, and consequential as the great battles of our armed forces' storied past. Our enemies will still be intent on defeating us and using our defeat to encourage their followers in the jihad they wage against us, a war which will become a greater threat to us should we quit the central battlefield in defeat. The Middle East will still be a tinderbox which our defeat could ignite in a regional war that will imperil our vital interests at risk there and draw us into a longer and far more costly war. The prospects of genocide in Iraq, in which we will be morally complicit, is still as real a consequence of our withdrawal today as it was yesterday. During our extended debate over the last few days, I've heard senators repeat certain arguments over and over and over again. My friends on the other side of this argument accuse those of us who oppose this amendment with advocating staying the course, which is intended to suggest that we are intent on continuing the mistakes, but that have put the outcome of the war in doubt. Yet we all know that with the arrival of General Petraeus, we have changed course. We're now fighting a counterinsurgency strategy, which some of us have argued we should have been following from the beginning, and which makes the most effective use of our strength and does not strengthen the tactics of our enemy. The new battle plan is succeeding where our previous tactics have failed, although the outcome remains far from certain. The tactics proposed in the amendment offered by my friends Senators Levin and Reid, a smaller force confined to bases distant from the battlefield, from where they will launch occasional search and destroy missions and train the Iraqi military, are precisely the tactics employed for most of the war, and which have, by anyone's account, failed miserably. Now that, Mr. President, is staying the course. And it is a course that inevitably leads to our defeat and the catastrophic consequences for Iraq, the region, and the security of the United States that our defeat would entail. Yes, we've heard quite a bit about the folly of staying the course, though the real outcome, should this amendment prevail and be signed into law, would be to deny our generals and the Americans they have the honor to command the ability to try in this late hour to address the calamity these tried and failed tactics produce, and salvage from the wreckage of our previous failures a measure of stability for Iraq and the Middle East and a more secure future for the American people. I've also listened to my colleagues on the other side repeatedly remind us that the American people have spoken in the last election. They have demanded we withdraw from Iraq, and it is our responsibility to do so as quickly as possible what they have bid us to do. Is that our primary responsibility? Really? Is that how we construe our role, to follow without question popular opinion, even if we believe it to be an error and likely to endanger the security of the country we have sworn to defend. Surely, we must be responsive to the people who have elected us to office and who, if it is their wish, will remove us when they become unsatisfied with our failure to heed their demands. I understand that, of course. And I understand why so many Americans have become sick and tired of this war, given the many, many mistakes made by civilian and military leaders in its prosecution. I, too, have been made sick at heart by these mistakes and the terrible price we have paid for them. But I cannot react to these mistakes by embracing a course of action that I know will be an even greater mistake, a mistake of colossal historical proportions, which will, and I am as sure as this, if I am of anything, seriously endanger the people I represent and the country I have served all my adult life. I have many responsibilities to the people of Arizona and to all Americans. I take them all seriously, or try to. But I have one responsibility that outweighs all the others, and that is to do everything in my power to use whatever meager talents I possess and every resource God has granted me to protect the security of this and good nation from all enemies, foreign and domestic, and that I intend to do, even if I must stand athwart popular public opinion. I will explain my reasons to the American people. I will attempt to convince as many of my countrymen as I can that we must show even greater patience, though our patience is nearly exhausted, and that as long as there is a prospect for not losing this war, then we must not choose to lose it. That's how I construe my responsibility to my constituency and my country. That's how I construed it yesterday. That's how I construe it today. And it is how I will construe it tomorrow. I do not know how I could choose any other course. I cannot be certain that I possess the skills to be persuasive. I cannot be certain that even if I could convince Americans to give General Petraeus the time he needs to determine whether we can prevail, that we will prevail in Iraq. All I'm certain of is that our defeat there would be catastrophic, not just for Iraq, but for us, and that I cannot be complicit in it, do whatever I can, whether I am effective or not, to help us try to avert it. That, Mr. President, is all I can possibly offer my country at this time. It is not much compared to the sacrifices made by Americans who have volunteered to shoulder a rifle and fight this war for us. I know that, and I'm humbled by it, as we all are. But though my duty is neither dangerous nor onerous, it compels me nonetheless to say to my colleagues and to all Americans who disagree with me that as long as we have a chance to succeed, we must try to succeed. I am privileged, as we all are, to be subject to the judgment of the American people and history. But my friends, they are not always the same judgment. The verdict of the people will arrive long before history's. I am unlikely to ever know how history has judged us in this hour. The public's judgment of me I will know soon enough. I will accept it as I must. But whether it is favorable or unforgiving, I will stand where I stand and take comfort from my confidence that I took my responsibilities to my country seriously, and despite the mistakes I have made as a public servant and the flaws I have as an advocate, I tried as best I could to help the country we all love, remain as safe as she could be in an hour of serious peril. Mr. President, I yield the floor.